This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Up to 500,000 people are expected in Washington, D.C. tomorrow for the March for Our Lives, a demonstration advocating school safety and organized by the survivors of last month's school shooting in Parkland, Florida. As Molly Bourne reports, several West Virginia students, many from the southern part of the state, will join their peers in the nation's capital.
A group of student activists meets in the cafeteria of Sherman High School in Boone County every Tuesday after school. They're called EPIC. It stands for Empowered, Prioritized, Intelligent Chicks. And they've been busy. Some members helped to organize a rally in March to support striking teachers earlier this month. And this week, the students nibble on donuts and fruit snacks as they make packing lists and finalize travel plans to D.C.
Smarty pants, is anything else to add to this packing list?
Sunglasses, maybe, because it might be bright.
Sunglasses.
Toothbrush.
One of the students attending is 16-year-old Haley Kenny.
Hopefully it stops people getting murdered. Like, hopefully it, like, signifies some importance of, like, students that don't even know the other students that died, standing up for them. Murder's horrible.
EPIC is part of Young West Virginia, a youth-led network of teens throughout the state. 8 students from Boone County are going to Washington, along with roughly 30 peers from Kanawha, Ohio, Cabell, Logan, Mingo, and Greenbrier counties. This End Mass Shooting Task Force follows a set of core values, including a shared desire to make schools safer. Students in this group say they generally feel safe at their small school of roughly 400 students, about a half hour from Charleston. But some, including junior Morgan Smith, say they were also shaken by what they describe as talk of a threat at the school shortly after the Florida shooting.
And it seemed like nothing at first, but I kept hearing about it, and I kept hearing about it, and I'm like, okay, this isn't something you guys can joke about, especially after a shooting happened. I got scared. I'd never been scared to come to school before for anything more than maybe a bully.
Freshman Liza Kelly is tasked with posting DC pictures to the group's Instagram page. She also has a ukulele at the meeting and is eager to play it.
Where we have this reputation of being, like, ignorant or stupid or addicted to drugs, like, we're trying to show that we're not that kind of group, and we are, like, actually trying to help with the country, and we're not just sitting here doing nothing.
Among this group are students whose family members are gun owners and hunters. Some identify as gun owners themselves. Morgan says she can understand arguments on both sides of the gun control debate, but she thinks AR-15 style rifles, like the one used in the Parkland shooting, belong only in the hands of law enforcement or military personnel.
You shouldn't be able to get an assault rifle. The only purpose of those is to kill a lot of people fast. Kill people fast. Guns like that don't serve a purpose. But I hunt, and I have guns. And self-defense, handguns, 100%, shouldn't be in a school or around a school. If you're walking around Walmart with a gun on your side, I see nothing wrong with that. It's for self-defense if something does go wrong, because how crazy of a world we live in.
EPIC is part of the Appalachian Center for Equality, which is run by the American Friends Service Committee. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Molly Bourne in Seth, Boone County.
This week on Inside Appalachia, we hear stories about cooking with local Appalachian ingredients. Host Jessica Lilly will chat with Mike Costello, a farmer and chef based in Harrison County. This morning, we'll hear an excerpt. Mike starts off talking about his inspiration for cooking, his grandmother.
I actually have a few memories that really kind of stick out of being in the kitchen with my grandma. One of the ones that I think some of my memories with my grandma kind of depend on the season. If it's the wintertime, I can certainly place myself back in her kitchen making these traditional Christmas cookies. Me, when I was about 3 or 4 years old, kind of on the stepladder trying to reach into the mixing bowl on the countertop. And that's something that I'll always remember. But then in the summertime, you know, it's like the memories are in the kitchen, but they're also sometimes out on the back porch, snapping half-runner beans and stringing beans. And all of the sensations kind of come back to you, you know, the sights and particularly the sounds of those beans snapping and the smell. If you're familiar with snapping beans, you know, you really realize that there's this kind of smell that brings you back. And the same thing, I think, with some of the heirloom tomatoes. That's why, you know, summer and fall is just such a special time to be in the garden, because it takes you back to a place that maybe at the time you didn't realize was so special, but many years later you're able to look back on it and realize what that meant.
You work with small farms across the state, including a number of maple syrup producers here in Appalachia, and have heard a number of stories about how families have been producing maple for a number of generations. Do we know how far back Appalachians have been tapping maple trees around here?
Well, it's a good question, Jessica, and we don't actually know for sure exactly how long people have been tapping maple trees and making maple syrup. But what we do know is that Native Americans were making maple syrup here in Appalachia in the Northeast long before white settlers ever arrived. And I think that's really important to point out because oftentimes, you know, especially when we're talking about Appalachian food heritage, we tend to overlook some of the diversity. And we've got this whole, you know, growing industry around maple syrup right now that kind of owes its entire existence to the presence of Native Americans and that heritage and the fact that Native Americans taught white settlers those traditions upon their arrival. Now, the farmers that I work with, it is true that they've been making maple syrup for several generations, and a lot of this goes back to a period of time around the Civil War when sugar was prohibitively expensive, especially if you're in these kind of high elevation mountain homesteads where you're sort of secluded from the shops and the more the developed world anyway. So, you know, these homesteads were creating a lot of what they would use in the kitchen. A lot of these pantry staples even they would produce or they would barter with neighboring farms. And it's fun for me to hear these stories from the producers that I work with because it gives me something that I can turn around and share with our guests at dinner when we were using maple syrup from Radabaugh Farms in Upshur County, for instance. It's not only that we're tasting that syrup, but we're getting to hear a family's history of how they've lived off the land and how they've become really kind of thrifty and innovative and how they've, you know, built through all that a business that allows them to still make some money of making maple syrup today.
Let's talk more about your culinary capabilities, because in addition to telling stories about food, you're also a chef. What's your favorite way to use maple syrup in the kitchen? Can it be used for savory foods or just for sweets?
Well, I'm not really sure that I have one particular favorite way to use maple syrup, but we use maple syrup a lot. We use it in a lot of different applications. Maple is certainly most commonly thought of as a sweetener, and we do make our fair share of desserts. We make like a Bloody Butcher corn cake that's soaked in maple syrup, and that's really nice. And we have an ice cream that's a buttermilk ice cream with maple, black walnuts, and a little bit of J.Q. Dickinson salt that's become pretty popular, maybe one of our signature desserts by now. And although maple is considered a sweetener, and by the way, that's totally fine because in many ways it's a much healthier option than just this refined white table sugar that we're all used to, which essentially doesn't have much nutritional value. Maple syrup, since it's less refined, it still has a fair amount of antioxidants and it's got some beneficial trace minerals that you just don't get from sugar. But even as something other than a sweetener, maple syrup is really dynamic. It can be used in a lot of savory applications, actually. Some of the examples from Lost Creek Farm, we make several salad dressings with maple syrup. We put maple syrup in our cooking greens, like kale or collard greens, as they're cooking down slowly in these braising liquids. We also raise meat rabbits here at the farm, and a maple braised rabbit is something that I think is really delicious. Sometimes we'll baste meats like rabbit or venison, even trout, with maple syrup when we cook it over an open fire or when we smoke it. It caramelizes really nicely, and the syrup really holds on to a lot of that nice smoky flavor from the fire itself.
Again, that was chef and farmer Mike Costello speaking with Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly. You can hear more of this interview and more stories about Appalachian food on this weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia, Sunday morning at 7 and Sunday evening at 6, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:53. Mostly sunny skies today with highs in the 40s and low 50s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the teens and 20s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny in the north. Increasing clouds in the south with a chance of rain or snow. Highs in the 30s and 40s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Wells Home Furnishings, featuring Stickley Furniture, handcrafted mission style, solid wood, and fine upholstery and leather furnishings, made in the USA since 1900. WellsHome.com. A former coal miner and veteran from West Virginia has been honored with the President's Lifetime Achievement Award in volunteerism. Roxy Todd reports Wayne McDonald has volunteered over 9,000 hours helping fellow veterans as an AmeriCorps VISTA.
Wayne McDonald is an Army veteran who served during the first Gulf War. He was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder when he returned to West Virginia. The local veteran center in Logan County actually helped him find medical care. Then they approached him about joining AmeriCorps through their Vet Corps program.
At first I said no, because I was afraid. I've never done anything like this. I didn't know how to work a computer, a copier. I didn't know none of this, but they talked me into it.
McDonald originally recorded that interview with West Virginia Public Broadcasting back in 2015. Now, 3 years later, he's still serving as an AmeriCorps volunteer at the Henlawson Veterans Center in Logan County. AmeriCorps members receive a living stipend and an education award for their service. This is the first time a West Virginian has received the President's Service Award. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd.
Poet, performer, visual artist, and rock and roll icon Patti Smith performs this week's Mountain Stage Song of the Week, People Have the Power. The driving anthem was co-written with her husband, Fred Sonic Smith, a native of Lincoln County, West Virginia, who was posthumously inducted into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame the evening prior to the performance.
Dreaming, well, of an aspect bright and fair. And my sleeping, it was broken, but my dream, it lingered near. In the farm of shining valleys, where the pure air rarefied. And my senses, a newly opened, I awaken into the cry that the people have the power.
Again, that was Patti Smith performing People Have the Power. You can catch this week's Mountain Stage on Saturday evening at 8, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Liz McCormick. I'm Teresa Wills.